You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
I don't know about you, but I had a fantastic time at the Trump train here in Texas.
That was a wonderful experience. And it's funny because we were kind of going to not go because we were lazing around in bed. And our son called us up and said he was going. Well, he didn't end up going, but since he was going, we went. And I am so glad we went. That was so much fun. And you know what? The patriotism of the people brought me to tears. It was about 500 vehicles, but thousands of people involved because each vehicle has several people.
Oh, I think every vehicle was loaded. And you know, this is Texas, right? So where did we meet? In the Walmart parking lot.
Yeah, which was absolutely full.
Which you
full.
Needed that. Yeah. You needed that because I think we all know how big Walmart parking lots were. And there wasn't a square foot that was not filled with a vehicle full of flags, full of placards, full of family. It was such a joyous and inspirational get together. And I'm so glad that we got to do it. It was funny because because we're kind of spontaneous, we decided, okay, let's get going. So we ran around the house. We had the appropriate American flag, thin blue line flag, Trump flag, and we're putting up our flags on our truck, getting our stuff ready to go, getting our Trump signs up. Thank God for duct tape.
Yes.
And we are off and running down to Walmart. And
yes,
it was so much fun.
You know, when you drive up there and you see, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of vehicles decorated with American flags and Trump flags and people that are decked out in red hats and red shirts and, you know, don't tread on me and Second Amendment and all kinds of American things. It's so nice. And, you know, not one single problem. These are the nicest people. And the other thing that really struck me, Ron, was the ages of the people. So everybody from as old as you can think of to as young as you can think of and everything in between. It was not a bunch of old people. It was not a bunch of young people. It was everybody.
And here's what it wasn't. It wasn't a bunch of white people. Okay. Now there was a lot of white people there because, you know, in the area of Texas that we live demographically, there are a lot of white people, but it was wonderful. There were all different races represented. And I don't know if you noticed this, Linda, but in that black pickup truck that was next to ours, where the guy was, you know, putting up his Trump flags and he came from San Antonio.
Right.
And what drew my attention is that I had my window rolled down and they were all speaking Spanish. All right. And so I, you know, looked at the guy and because I understand Spanish fluently, I speak it fluently. And I was looking at him and he looked at me and we were laughing and he looks at me and he probably said, okay, he's a white guy. I'm going to speak English. And we were having a great conversation. And he says, you know, I had my truck in San Antonio and somebody stole my American flag. And he goes, so I came over here. I got a new American flag out of Walmart and his whole family was there. It was such a welcoming, it was very inclusive, and everybody had a great time. And you know what I don't think you and I expected? When we went up through our town, which is a small town.
It's a small town.
Right? Because our county is a small county. Mm-hmm. And I did not expect the thousands of people that were along the way with sitting in chairs. It was like a parade, don't you think?
Yeah.
It was a parade. They were sitting in chairs. They had Trump signs. They had Trump flags, American flags, thin blue line flags. And they were screaming in support and thumbs up and had the four finger sign for four more years. And we went all the way from our town to the next town, which is 12 miles away. And all along that route, and thank God we got to use frontage roads, not on the highway, people had pulled to the side of the road to encourage us on. I just thought it was amazing.
That was amazing. People came out of their businesses, people sitting on their ranches way back, like an acre away from the road.
I saw that lady. Yeah,
they were sitting on the front porch and they're waving. Everybody's waving. And it's one of the things I love about Texas is everybody waves at you. When you drive by, people wave at you. As opposed to when we lived in California, it was the one finger wave. But here, everybody's legitimately waving.
And by the way, if you're from out of state and you move to Texas, and especially if you're from California, you probably want to get some Bengay when you move here, because your arm's going to be sore from waving to people all over the place, because that's what we do here in Texas.
Yeah. This was such an inspirational event. I didn't expect it. I thought it would be about 50 cars or so, not 500. I didn't expect the line to extend for miles and miles. And
our line actually was about 4 miles long, the cars. Yeah, can you imagine that?
It was just crazy.
Bumper to bumper, 4 miles long.
Crazy participation. And since we're in a small town, lots of people came from outside of our town and joined. And, you know, then even when it was over and we still had our flags on the truck and we're driving through town, I mean, people are honking at us and giving us thumbs up and waving. It is just such a tidal wave out here for President Trump. And truth be told, we had 3 one-finger salutes in the entire trip by people that obviously were not Trump supporters. Out of the thousands of people that lined the roads, we had 3 people that didn't like this Trump train.
But I want to also add, and you alluded to it, but okay, so figure that there is at least 1,000 people in the Trump train. Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe more, because most of those cars had about 4 or 5 people, you know, in the cars. Would you not agree?
I agree.
Yeah. And then there's thousands of people along the way. And this was round trip was about 24, 20.
It took us an hour and a half.
25 miles, right? It was about 13 miles up and about 13 miles back. And during that whole procession, which I think, hour and a half, took about an hour and a half. Not a single incident, not one incident. And what was really cool in our county and in our town, the police chief had turned out what seemed like the entire police department and the sheriff did the same thing, because it was from one town in the county to another town in the county, which was the northernmost town in the county. And ours is the southernmost town. It would have to be east and west. It's not north and south. I'm sorry. It's east and west. So the easternmost town in the county, and we are the westernmost town in the county, 26-mile round trip. And the sheriff's office came and the police department, and they literally blocked off all the main roadways so that the Trump train could pass by. And I'll tell you what, that was what a wonderful gesture. I emailed both the chief and the sheriff to let them know that that was super cool.
Yeah. And we're going to do it again in the next coming weeks.
Right.
Trump train is moving on to other cities and we're going to be part of it because we had so much fun. The camaraderie between the people is such a kind of juxtaposition to what we're seeing in, say, Portland and Seattle and some of these other cities. The to have this many people in one place and have everybody on the same page and have everybody get along and have it be fun, that's how it should be.
Now, this was, you know, every weekend this takes place on Saturday.
All over the country.
Let's mention that, Linda, because I think it's important. So if you think that you might want to get involved in a Trump train, and there's also the Trump flotilla.
Right.
Okay. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. But if you want to get involved in something like that, there is a national organization. I believe it's called the Trump Train. Just Google Trump Train. And when you Google that, I think they're going to ask you, you know, like, where do you live? What city do you live in? And it will direct you to your local community Trump Train organization. So there's a national organization. And in our county, there is a one for our town. And that's the one we signed up for, okay? But What is also cool, and you probably saw this on the major news media and everything, because well, probably not much on the mainstream media, but maybe you see it on One America News or Fox News. There is also a Trump flotilla, and that's hundreds, if not thousands, of boats that do the same thing that the cars do. And we had a huge one here in Texas on Lake Travis.
Yeah, we didn't even know about that one. We were looking at the New Jersey one, which they were trying to set the world record. I didn't hear if they did or not. They were trying to set the world record for the most boats out there for a Trump train. But at the same time, we saw that Lake Travis, which is not too awfully far from us, had the same thing, and it looked amazing. You know,
I wish we still had our boat or our sea dues. Okay,
it's so inspiring, and it's inspiring for President Trump, but it was inspiring for me to see all the people that were coming together for something in a really positive way
and very peaceful way.
Yeah, in a very peaceful way, and not what we've been seeing on the news for so many weeks at a time. It just was inspiring that Americans are still out here, and you know, the heartland is still, we are still here.
And I guess I must have missed that Biden train, right? Literally missed the train on that one, Linda.
I haven't, you know, of course.
I think they're all in their basement. It could be a Biden basement train.
I think it's a virtual train.
Of course.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought that was neat. But you know what it brought up? And you know, I've got to write a column about this because it struck me in the middle of the night. And I think the title of my column would be, "You're Not Really Free If ... So you're not really free if you can't have a Trump sign or a Trump flag in your front yard.
Or an American flag, for heaven's sakes.
In your front yard. You're not really free if you want to put a Trump bumper sticker on your car, but you're worried that if you put it on there, somebody will break your window, or they'll vandalize your car, or they'll accost you, okay, and intimidate you. You're not free if you can do that. You are not free if you have a homeowners association that will not let you fly an American flag or a first responder flag or a thin blue line flag or a Trump flag. You're not free.
Well, I will say, and I don't know about homeowners associations, but the law is, as I understand it, and I don't know if it's all over the country, but I believe it is, but I don't know. That a political sign can go in your yard and nobody can say a thing about it.
Well, that is your First Amendment right. Let me continue on with you're not free if. You're not free if you are wearing a Make America Great Again hat, a Donald Trump hat, an American flag shirt, or a first responder shirt, or a thin blue line or pro-law enforcement shirt, and they refuse to serve you in a restaurant.
Or they throw you out of school, or any number of, or your workplace, they throw you out of your workplace. I mean, these are things that we ought to be allowed to wear.
You are not free if your school no longer makes you do the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States. You are not free, truly free, if there is no freedoms for you. If you can't say what you want, when you want to say it, as long as it's not inciting, you know, violence or hurtful, meaning, you know, you're screaming and swearing at people. You're not free if you can't walk down the street without being accosted. You're not free, Linda, if you are eating in or outside in a restaurant and you are accosted by a militant group that gets in your face and demands that you do a, you know, power fist or scream out a Marxist political chant, and you can't eat your food in privacy. You are not free.
Well, the other thing that you're reminding me of is I don't feel free with Google and Facebook, when they block everything that the conservatives put on about President Trump, they would even, there are sites that even block about the Trump train, where they have things on there that are despicable, like people that want to kill all white people. And they say that that doesn't is not affected by their policies. So you can't talk about the Trump train, but you can talk about killing white people. And I disagree with that. And I think that these big companies, the Googles and the Facebooks, the YouTubes, are taking away our First Amendment rights.
You are not free if you are a instructor or a professor in a elementary school, in a middle school, in a high school, or in an institution of higher learning, and you cannot speak the truth. You are not free. You are not free if the counterculture silences you, intimidates you, forces you out of your place of employment,
cancels you.
Right. You are not free.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And that is where the Biden group is taking us.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and this was, you know, it was interesting. So like you said, you know, we do this 26-mile round trip Trump train, and we got the finger by three different people out of the thousands and thousands of people that were there. Okay. And I mean, the middle finger is what I'm referring to. And I was engaged, I guess is the word, as we're driving down the other town, which is even a smaller town than ours, and everybody's hanging out of windows with flags, American flags, a very patriotic and Trump sign. And this lady's on the driver's side of my door, and she actually started out being about 10 feet away from me, and then she moved to about 6 feet from our car, which was in a line of cars. And she didn't say anything, but defiantly, she sticks out that middle finger, and she looked like she was in her late 60s, maybe early 70s. And I said to her, you know, because I had four fingers out for four more years, and she gave me the middle finger. And I said, no, you got it wrong. It's not one finger, it's four, you know, as we drove by. But I said to myself, I'm going, really? Really, lady? You know, you could number one, not show up on the street, or you could be on the street and you could, you know, disapprove. You could tell your friends that you disapproved with what's going on, but you're living in America, maybe not in your world. Okay. And maybe you want to turn our world around and make it more like your world, where you suppress the expression of freedom and who you want to vote for, and your care for America, and you care for law enforcement and your first responders. And you could have just kept your hands in your pocket. But that is the way that you decided to voice your dissent, okay, by flipping us off and saying F you.
One thing I've noticed is that the Trump people are just like the people we saw. And the Biden people are angry people. And that says something in and of itself, in my opinion. Hey, I want to talk about something really serious after I get you your first cup of coffee.
That sounds great.
Well, the war on America's cities and claims of racism in the ranks of law enforcement have spirited a renewed debate on racial equality. It was Alexis de Tocqueville who reminded us, Americans are so enamored of equality, they would rather be equal in slavery than unequal in freedom. To which I say, be warned of the shiny object, America. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, it's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Well, I want to talk to you and have a discussion about the critical race theory that Trump has just made sure is defunded. And what is it, and where did it come from, and how did all this start? Well, there is a laboratory called Sandia Labs. And Sandia Labs is a federally funded research laboratory that actually designs our nuclear weapons. Okay? Well, at Sandia Labs, they were very invested in this critical race theory, and they made their employees, especially the white male employees, have three-day training in this critical race theory. What happened was an engineer named Casey Peterson, he emailed 16,000 employees and said, here's what they're doing. He's denouncing the critical race theory and hoping to spark a rebellion amidst the employees, which he certainly did. What happened was that the executives of Sandia Labs came out and they immediately took his post down and they scrubbed it from the company's servers. But like so many times that things happen, because it was scrubbed and taken down, the people that already had it made it go viral. So it became a big thing that now people were looking at critical race. And they locked this guy, Peterson, out of the network, and they punished him and made him be like an outcast. But they also made it clear at Sandia that they want to force the critical race theory, which is race segregated training and white male re-education camp, on their employees. All the dissidents in that company would be severely punished. So that's where we start with this story. And I want you to kind of give me your thoughts on what the critical race theory is.
Well, sure. I learned about critical race theory, a number of years ago, actually just coming up now, but it's actually been around for a long time. I remember the beginnings of critical race theory out of the San Francisco Bay Area and Chicago areas. And it actually started, Linda, around the mid to the late 80s. And then long about 2001, 2002, a couple of guys, political scientists kind of guys, by the name of Richard Delgado and Gene Stefanczyk, is his last name, wrote a book called Critical Race Theory. And the acronym for critical race theory is CRT. So that's when the book came out. Now, there's been a second edition of the book that came out in 2012. But essentially, it says the same thing. And I'm going to talk about it briefly, but you get the theory. But what I found interesting is who wrote the introduction in the second book. And that's a gal that I know well, and you know her, and her name is Angela Harris. Angela Harris is a professor from UC Davis. She used to be from UC Berkeley. People's Republic of Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And she is very much a Marxist socialist.
Yes.
Absolutely. And she's been involved with the law school and poli-sci in both of those universities. And so what the critical race theory, some of the language is language that we hear about today. So some of these terms that you hear about called white privilege, right? And forcing white people to feel guilty about being white and apologetic about being white. This is all essentially Marxist class struggle theory. That's what it is. It's Marxist class struggle. It's not democratic whatsoever. And so there's actually chapters in the book that discuss how to combine race with the law so that you start getting legislation that basically silences people that you don't agree with.
Yes.
So instead of having a democratic discourse, we're silencing these people.
Well, and it's furthering the division between the races. That so these agencies, federal agencies, are sending white males to multi-day re-education classes. Where does that word come from? Re-education. That's seriously a Marxist word. They are told that they're naturally oppressive of women and non-whites because of their white privilege. I'm sorry, that is just so much baloney.
And the rhetoric of the systemic racism,
yes,
it comes from CRT. It comes from critical race theory. So this stuff that we're hearing now, you know how it's been emerging, especially within the last few years, during the Trump administration, at the end of the Obama administration. Okay. And, you know, a couple of the things that I can't find when I Google the heck out of CRT, when it started to be taught in the federal government.
You and I are on the same page because I was trying to do the same thing and I couldn't find it either.
So it's not transparent.
No, it's not transparent. But I can't express enough that what they are telling employees and people in our federal government is that America is a fundamentally white supremacist country, and that virtually all white people uphold the system of racism and white superiority. This is the kind of conversation that now you're hearing CNN throw out, MSNBC throw out, and this is where it comes from, and that they are asking white employees, for example, at the Treasury Department and other organizations like that, to accept that they have white privilege. No, I don't accept that. I worked for every single thing I have, and none of us should be accepting that we have some sort of privilege. Everybody in America, it is the basis and foundation of America, Ron, that we all are created equal and that we all can have the same opportunities.
Well, you know what gets me, Linda, and this is very consistent with this movement. And by the way, even the authors refer to CRT as a movement. Okay, so it's not simple political theory. It's not simple race theory. It's a movement. And so the people that subscribe to this movement are predominantly Marxists and Black nationalists, like Black Lives Matter subscribes to this theory. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to force this down people's throats of all races, but it's one-sided. What do you think would happen, me as a former professor, to come in and to teach a class that would be even based and talking about
they wouldn't have you there.
The Black Lives, how about if I talk about the Black Lives Matter movement and I talk about Marxism and Black nationalism and Black nationalism and Black separatists? And what if I talked about some of the things in my chapter, in my chapters, and in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police? What if I talked about Al Sharpton, an avowed racist that has talked about killing Black people in 1992? I actually have the link to the video of him giving a speech where he is encouraging the assassination of white people. And then he visits the White House on 63 different occasions, an avowed Black racist. Do you think that I would be allowed to teach my theory in any university?
No.
Do you think the government would pay me to teach my theory and force Black people to listen to my theory about, you know, and actually the facts about the Black Lives Matter movement, the old Black Panther Party and the new Black Panther Party, which is just all the Black Panther Party? What about if I was going to talk about the Reverend, what's his name, that Obama went to his church for?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Reverend Wright for 20 years. What do you think?
Well, no, I don't think that they would let you, but here's some scary news, is that there is similar indoctrination going on at our FBI, which is now holding weekly seminars on intersectionality, which is a hard left academic theory that reduces people to a network of racial, gender, and sexual orientation identities. The white male is out, but all of these other things are in. And I have to believe that most of America would be totally angry with this happening in all of our federal government because they understand it not to be true. We are supposed to be one people. We are Americans. That's what we're supposed to be. We're not supposed to be Black Americans, white Americans, gay Americans, lesbian Americans. We're not supposed to be that. We are supposed to be Americans.
And you know, that's the whole issue about the intersectionality. And by the way, because I am familiar with CRT theory and the second edition of the book, which is just goes beyond a little bit of the first edition of the book. Intersectionality is a chapter in the book. So when they bring that into the FBI, what they're doing is they're sneaking in CRT. They're sneaking in critical race theory.
But what they are doing here is they are creating a division amongst the races where the people feel that they are not, that the system is racist. That's where we're getting all this talk about systemic racism, because they're putting it in people's heads when it wasn't there to start with.
Well, that's the rhetoric in the critical race theory, okay? And that is the systemic racism. So I'm hoping that you and I, in some small part, in some small measure, are starting to connect the dots for people that are hearing this rhetoric that, you know, that has come out increasingly during this campaign about the systemic racism and about this and about that.
It's a narrative, and it's a narrative based on Marxism. It's a narrative that seeks to divide us against one another. And how would you feel if you had in your job, if you had anybody that is hearing us, how would you feel if in your job you had to take these classes and then you had to write a letter of apology to women and people of color for things that you have done as a white male? That's just wrong. And I'm so insulted by this. Yet our federal government is doing this. And by the way, it was doing this under the Obama-Biden administration. And again, this is totally wrong.
Well, and I want to try to connect an additional dot here. But you brought up something in regards to the, you know, O'Biden administration. So now we've got Joe Biden, who's been in Washington, D.C. for pretty close to 50 years. And he's talking about all this is wrong and that's wrong and we have this systemic racism and I'm going to change it. I'm going to stop it. Hey, bro, I mean, you were there. You know, you've been there for 50 years, for God's sakes, and you were vice president of the United States under the country's first black president for 8 years. What the hell did you do? Okay, what the hell did you do? And so did you foster systemic racism? Did Obama foster systemic racism? Come on. But you know what, Linda? This doesn't happen in a vacuum, because as you and I have talked about in the educational process, this starts with the young children. And I want to talk about the connection between critical race theory and something else that people are just learning about, called the 1619 History Project.
Yes, and we have railed against the history and the revisionist history in our schools, and now it has come to President Trump's attention, and he is stopping it and not funding any schools that teach this.
That's exactly right. So the reason that it's called the 1619 History Project, and by the way, this was a theory. It's not factual. That's what everybody needs to know. It is not based on facts. It's not based on objective forensic evidence. It is simply a theory written by a couple of authors in the New York Times. We love that paper, don't
boy.
We? Okay, the New York Times.
Must be a fact.
And it's called the 1619 Project because in their theory, their premise is that America's real history began in 1619 when slaves were first introduced into America. Okay, that's when American history actually began. And so what's happened is it's just all bunk. There's nothing that's based on a truism. Like you said, it's revisionist history and multiple recognized and established United States historians of U.S. history have thoroughly criticized the 1619 Project, at citing that it is completely inaccurate. It's not based on any facts, and it is revisioning history. You know how they say reimagine law enforcement?
Yes.
Let's reimagine justice. Let's reimagine law enforcement. This is reimagining the United States in a way that the United States factually wasn't. And so even the authors of this revisionist history have said
that it is divisive.
Right. Well, the idea was, the 1619 Project was kind of exploring how the years of slavery that happened when the ship carrying enslaved Africans arrived in a port in Virginia, how that still shapes our country today. That's the whole basis for this, that somebody decided, well, here's how it shapes it.
Right. But it's not how it shapes.
Understand. It was somebody's opinion.
Sure. Is it a fact that slaves were introduced into the United States before it was the United States, into what we call the Americas? Yeah, that's an absolute fact. You can't get around that. But that's not the true history in its totality of the United States. And I have these arguments, civil arguments, with these people that say, oh, there's systemic racism throughout the United States. And these people end up being successful people. And I'm saying, well, geez, with all this systemic racism, how did you manage to get to the position that you're in? Was it because of minority hiring? Okay. Or was it because of systemic racism? Or rather, was it because you applied yourself, you valued education, you developed job skills, you worked really hard, you were tenacious, and you fought and you got the job that you feel you deserved? I mean, you can't have it both ways. You either have to say, well, I got this job because of minority hiring. And if you got that, how does that reconcile with systemic racism?
Well, one of the biggest issues, I mean, the entire basis for this type of education is flawed, because one of the articles was that the American Revolution was fought not to achieve independence from Britain, which of course was the purpose, but to preserve the institution of slavery. That's patently false.
And they said the same thing about the War of 1812 too.
Yep. So it is a racially divisive account of our history. It's a revisionist account of our history. And President Trump is looking to defund or not give funds to any school that is teaching this.
Right, exactly. The Office of Management and Budget has been told by President Trump to stop funding it. The United States Department of Education has been told to stop funding it. And it's interesting, Linda, where they're teaching the 1619 theory of history. And it started in Chicago and Washington, D.C. Take a look at both of those cities and look at what those cities have become. Look at the high levels of violence. Look at the democratic leadership of those cities. I think, God, in I don't know about Washington, D.C., but I can tell you for a fact, in Chicago, it's been for well over 80 years. So,
do you know what I see, Ron? I see a concerted effort on the behalf of many people, to continue to divide this country by race, where, in my opinion, prior to the Obama administration, we were very far along with those race relations and went backwards at that time.
Yeah. And the other thing, and I'm hoping people are listening to us and connecting the dots, but look at the nexus or the connection between critical race theory and the 1619 Project. You see
they're
how
very
they
similar.
Join together.
Yes.
Because they're intended to join together. Hey, this was a phenomenal discussion. There's so much more that we want to discuss in the future, but let me get you our last cup of coffee. Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DrRonMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice.
Well, one of the things that we've been all waiting for is a vaccine for COVID. And three major companies are working on actually hundreds of companies are, but three major ones in the US, Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson. And then there's a French pharmaceutical company that's also pretty close called Sanofi. Well, these places are important in the news because they have pledged not to put anything on the market until it is fully tested and vetted, because there has been a lot of conversation in the past couple of weeks that Trump was just going to rush to put any old thing out and give it to the American people, and it would be dangerous for them just so that he could win the election. And nothing could be further from the truth, because number one, President Trump doesn't have that authority to do that. These companies have rules and regulations to follow, and they have made a pledge to the American people that they will not put something out until it is absolutely approved and ready to use.
Okay. Yeah, because I can't think of anything that would be worse than bringing out something that was, you know, harmful to the American people and or something that was ineffective.
Sure. So that's just some reassurance for the American people. One of the sad things with COVID is the airlines have been just devastated by the lack of travelers, and planes have just so few people on them, and they will be laying off a lot of people.
You know, we just picked up one of our friends from the airport, and God, you know, you and I had not been to the airport for months, but we asked her. So, you know, and her flight went from Michigan down to San Antonio. Mm-hmm. And we said, so how many people did you have on the airplane? And she said, well, on one, we had 12. And on the other, we had 20.
Wow.
And I said, oh my God. So what are the protocols? And she said, well, from the minute that, you know, you get to the airport, you're wearing a mask, and then all the way through everything and on the airplane 100% of the time. And she said, the first time I took my mask off all day was just before you guys drove up to the curb. And I remember because I saw she was wearing her mask on the curb, and then she took it off and we pulled up. So, boy, you got to feel bad for the airlines.
Well, but here's some good news. A study was just done about how clean the air is on the planes, and it actually is pretty clean. So the HEPA filters that they use in the planes, they really filter out everything, and the air is recirculated in the plane every few minutes.
And,
I mean,
you know,
totally.
That has always been one of the things, and I've mentioned this before, Lynn, one of the things that I worry about when I fly, because I go, oh my God, I'm in here with all these people, breathing recirculated air.
Yeah. So just FYI, which I don't think that most people know, about 40% of a cabin's air gets filtered through this HEPA system, but the remaining 60% is fresh and piped in from outside the plane. The air is recirculated entirely in the plane every 3 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. So what they found was that the air in the planes is very, very safe. So if you want to fly somewhere, you know, pack your suitcase and go and get on the plane and fly, because it is not the problem that it has been thought to be. Now, why are masks essential on the planes? Because if you cough, you are wearing the mask, right? If you cough and you have any sign of COVID, those particles can get on the armrests or the chairs or things like that. And that's what they're trying to prevent. It's not so much that you're preventing your breathing in other people as preventing your particulates from getting out of your mask.
Well, you know, I'm glad we're having this conversation, because as you know, at the end of this month, Dr. Ron's taken off into the airwaves again. And, you know, I'm going to be going out to California for a trial and in two different locations, as a matter of fact, and then coming back. So I'm glad we're talking about this right now.
Well, and I'll tell you that in the United States, it is not a United States policy that you have to have masks on airplanes. However, it is dictated by the airline. So
right.
Really fly an airline that requires masks, because even though you may be uncomfortable, and by the way, choose a mask that's comfortable, because if you get one that is not comfortable, as far as it's very hot, then you're going to be uncomfortable the whole time.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I personally, and we were just talking about this, you know, yesterday, because we got brand new glasses. And I said, you know, I can't wear that mask over my nose, because number one, I have a little bit of a difficult time breathing without sucking in some air from my nostrils. But the other thing is it steams up my glasses.
Well, the polyester masks are very hot. So a mixture of cotton and polyester is better. And there are masks on the market, and you're just going to have to try them that are going to be much cooler, you know, when you're wearing them. So because I happen to sell them, I know, you know, I had ordered myself a lot of samples to see what works best. So anyway, another thing is you have to keep your mask on from the time you get to the airport till the time you get out of your arrival airport. But the airlines are disinfecting everything. And your biggest risk is not going to be on the airplane. It's going to be in the airport and what you do and how you behave in the airport, you know?
Yeah. And you know, one of the first things that I do, and you know, I always keep the hand sanitizer and I always keep two sets of gloves with me. But when I get off the airplane, the first thing I do is I go into the bathroom and I wash up. I mean, that's the first thing I do.
And that's exactly what they say to do, is even before you take your mask off, wash your hands.
That's Dr. Ron.
Right. So because you're still touching things, so, you know, wash your hands. You can actually fly pretty safely. And for people that need to conduct business or they need to or want to go travel somewhere, you know, feel free to do so. Our airlines are devastated. They've done the things to protect us. Now they need us back. And that's that. Well, another thing that kind of hasn't happened because of COVID, but it's increased the popularity of canned wine.
Wait a minute. Now, I've heard of boxed wine, but now there's canned wine?
There is canned wine.
Why am I not seeing this at HEB?
Well, you know, it's probably there, but we've never looked for it.
Because we're not in the canned wine section.
you don't snub your nose at it, because it really is a thing that's happening more and more and more.
Well, I want to know all about it because I'm, you know, Dr. Ron, the wine snob.
Well, that, you know, there's a number of reasons for it. And the people that are older, that are used to drinking wine out of the bottles and smelling the cork and doing that whole thing.
This is especially good for Texans that drink nothing but canned beer. It's a good transition, guys and gals.
They're probably not going to go for the canned wine. But younger people look at it more practically. The cans are much easier to dispose of and much easier to recycle than glass. They are easier to store. They are smaller. And, you know, they come in all kinds of fun colors and designs.
Well, you know, I get that. Can I ask you probably the most important question for we wine connoisseurs that usually drink out of the sack? So how does the fact that the wine is in an aluminum canister, how does that affect the taste of the wine, Ryan?
Well, it's not the same as the wine that's in the bottle. And here's why. The alcohol and acids in canned wine, they have to be in a narrower parameter than bottled wine because they don't want it to eat up the can.
Well, it's going to be corrosive, right?
Right.
That's why we put cans. By the way, that's why we have, you know, wine in bottles or in, you know, flasks or in, barrels, and also, you know, in boxes of wine.
Well,
right?
But they have made the adjustments that they need to. And the canned wines also have a slight effervescence because they are packaged under pressure.
Right.
So they limit the kinds of wine and the styles of wine that can be in cans, but the wine that is in cans seems to be actually pretty good. The thing is that younger people coming up now, they understand and they like the convenience. So they're going to ignore, because they're not wine snobs, they're going to ignore that and just enjoy their wine. So the canned wine market is growing, and people are, you know, putting labels on it or putting things on it. There's one canned wine in particular that is from Francis Ford Coppola's winery that is a Blanc de Blanc mini, which is named after his daughter, Sophia. And it came out in a pink can, and you know, it's very attractive for women, and that is selling off the shelves. So there is a place for everything.
Well, I know what I want to do because I know they carry Francis Ford Coppola's wine at HEB.
Okay.
So here's what I want us to do, and then have another coffee conversation about this later.
We'll have a wine conversation.
Well, yeah, then let's do that. Let's go to the store. Let's get some canned wine, and then let's just compare it. You know, let's take, you and I like to drink white wines, and let's take that Pinot Grigio and a Sauvignon Blanc, and let's get a couple of cans of those two different flavors of canned wine, and then compare it to a couple of bottles of wine that we've got here.
I'm not a wine snob, so I'm okay with that. Hey, there is a guy that writes an article every day, and I just love him. His name is Rip McIntosh.
So Rip, we're giving you, we don't even know you, but we're giving you a plug, bro.
Yeah, because I read you every day, Rip. And every day you get a different article, and he's very thoughtful, and he's got a lot of fun things to say. So I want to pull a few things out of one of his recent articles, because they were, I love these where there's just a potpourri of little tidbits that he gives you. So I'm just going to pick a few out and go over them with you.
And I think Rip's retired, right? So he's got nothing else to do in his life except to write these great columns.
And he's got time to do it. Yes.
So we're envious, Rip.
Yep. Well, one of the things was he's talking about how the NBA ratings have crashed by 23% now because of, you know, the people getting tired of LeBron James lecturing us about how bad America is.
Well, and Colin Kaepernick. But guess what? Both LeBron and Colin are still making tens of millions of dollars off of their endorsements, aren't they? Right?
Well, I don't know if anybody's pulled their endorsements or not, but the NBA's entire ratings have dropped by almost a quarter. So that's got to cost somebody some money.
But you know, yesterday I saw an article about Nike, which is, I don't know about LeBron James, if Nike is part of his thing, one of his, you know, sponsors, but for Colin Kaepernick, they built an entire program around Colin Kaepernick at Nike, and they just posted a $789 million quarterly loss, and they're laying off a boatload of people.
When they endorsed Colin Kaepernick, we said that that would happen.
That's the end. Now, we used to wear Nike stuff.
They did say when they very first did it, they said that their sales went up, but now they've crashed. So don't know if that's the reason, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's a big part of it. Another one of Rip's observations is the mainstream media that keeps harping on systemic racism in America. Why didn't we stamp out this scourge when Obama and Biden were in office?
Which is what we talked about earlier during our conversation.
Right, exactly.
So people are finally waking up to that?
Well, he's saying that people should take a hard look at Joe Biden and some of the things he said on the floor of the Senate about blacks. He's no champion of blacks.
Oh, absolutely not a friend.
Another thing that happened recently was that Governor Cuomo announced that President Trump is not welcome in New York.
I'm telling you what, the guy who's not welcome in New York is Cuomo. Okay, and also Bill de Blasio.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I dare you guys to walk down the street without your security detail and tell me you're not going to get your butts kicked. Okay, those people are hated in New York City.
And here's another thing that Rip says that you need to think about, that if the Biden ticket wins and they do away with the Electoral College as they want to do, that your votes would be selected, or the president would be selected by Washington, Oregon, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, Virginia, Delaware, and Maryland, and that's it.
Wow.
Yep. So everybody else in the country would really be completely...
Yeah, and that's why people like us try to sound the alarm. Common sense conservatives all around the country are trying to sound the alarm. One American News, Fox News, tries to sound the alarm. Patriot Radio tries to sound the alarm. Yeah, and then, you know, I want to talk about hypocrisy.
Okay.
Which is a really easy thing to do when we're talking about politics and politicians, because there's always hypocrisy. And so Rip talks about the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. And he says, and listen to this, he says, look, if she can be tricked by a hair salon, person that owns a hair salon, then why the heck should we be entrusting her with national secrets, right? Makes a lot of sense, right? And you know, of course, he says she probably got it wrong. She probably misread the sign on the front of the salon, and she thought it said saloon.
Well, another thing that was interesting is that, and I think we've talked about this before, is California's new district attorney issued a policy that police are required to consider the looter's needs before charging them with a crime.
Oh, yeah. That's the new newly elected Soros-backed district attorney in Contra Costa County. And I used to be an expert up in Contra Costa County. Here's the scary thing, Lynn. I bet you don't know this. Before she was the DA, she was a judge.
Yeah, that is scary. Well, so if the looter needs something like a new Jordan sneakers or a Gucci bag, then, you know, don't charge them. It's not robbery.
Yeah, because they really needed it.
Of course, they need it. So those are some of the things that, that Rip has to say. The other, just some quick points that he says, is Kamala Harris, the vice presidential candidate, owns a gun but doesn't want you to own one. Lori Lightfoot, speaking of hypocrisy, Chicago's mayor leaves for vacation but forces you to stay home. And then, of course, Nancy Pelosi in the hair salon. And, you know, I have to add one of my own to that, and that is the medical insurance that all of those politicians get that we all don't get.
Oh, well, that's a place to start, not a place to end. They don't use our Social Security system. All of the stuff that they force on us through legislation, they are not involved in one bit. They have their own system. This is the rich political elite, and this is pure Marxism. And I'll tell you what, if President Trump gets reelected, and I think he will be reelected, and he's a lame duck president, this crap has got to stop. These people, meaning the Congress and the Senate, should be legislated to have exactly the same insurance, medical insurance, Social Security, all the investments that we as the American public have. Don't you think?
I do absolutely think. And I just have one more because I love this one the best. So we have the controversy over Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, Police Lives Matter. Rip says it's all nonsense. 2,000 years ago, Jesus ended the debate over which lives matter. He died for all of us. Never forget that. And I love that.
So great conversation. Linda, let's talk about how people can follow Dr. Ron and Linda and catch our shows on America Out Loud.
Well, Talking While Married is on America Out Loud every day at 8 o'clock Eastern time. And if you miss it, then we're on podcast. So you can listen on any of your podcast links like Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, any of the above. And just follow us on America Out Loud.
And we're there 24/7 in podcast. And listen, if you have not yet picked up a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter and the War on Police, you can't get it on Amazon because Jeff Bezos took it down. But you can get it on my special forensic website at drronmartinelli.com. That's drronmartinelli.com.
And Dr. Ron just wrote two fabulous new books. His first in his fiction series about Texas Ranger Wade Justice. They are fascinating. They are forensically correct. And all of the places and
the characters aren't real, but all of the places,
all of the forensics in these books are 100% accurate. You can pick those books up on Amazon or Barnes and Noble. You can put them on your Kindle or your
Every way that you can get a normal book.
Your other reader. But also you can go to Wade Justice. That's WadeJustus.com. And if you order from our site, Dr. Ron will personally autograph that book for you. So we look forward to seeing you next time. AmericaOutloud.com.